This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. When you think of technology entrepreneurs, chances are you don't immediately flash onto images of high heels and power pantsuits. And for good reason. Female entrepreneurs are still a minority in the tech world. But a recent study in Xconomy, an online magazine that reports on business and technology news, claims Boston may actually be the place to be a female tech entrepreneur. According to the study, 27% of tech entrepreneurs in Boston are female, compared to only 6% in California and only 7% in New York. So is Boston really a haven for female entrepreneurs? Listeners, are you a female entrepreneur trying to launch a startup? Do you think female entrepreneurs have an easier time here in Boston than anywhere else? What are the obstacles that women entrepreneurs face? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now to talk about female tech entrepreneurs in Boston are Greg Huang. He's the editor of Xconomy Boston. Welcome to Radio Boston, Greg.
Thanks very much, Sasha. Great to be here.
And also joining us is Jules Pieri. She's CEO and founder of The Daily Grommet. It's an online marketplace for consumer products. Thanks for being here, Jules.
Thanks, Sasha.
And with us by phone is another female tech entrepreneur, Laura Fitton. She's founder and CEO of 140, which is a marketplace for Twitter apps.
Hi.
So, Greg, why don't we start with you? You published this article. You wrote this article about this recent study that came out showing that even though women are largely underrepresented in tech startups, at least ones that are getting venture capital funding, Boston shows up sort of off the charts, relatively speaking, 27%. Now, there are a lot of caveats to this, so maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so the data comes from a partner of ours called CB Insights, and they track startups and private companies around the country. And, I mean, the thing is that it was based on data from the past six months, so the first half of 2010. And it could be a fairly small sample size. It's like 165 companies around the country. So, you know,
which were in Boston.
I'm sorry,
exactly.
16 of which were in Boston?
Yeah.
So 16 out of 165.
So, you know, having four companies get money in the first 6 months of the year, it could skew the numbers quite a bit.
And actually, Jules, your company was one of those.
Yes, I can
money.
Probably ID all four of them. We know each other.
I think so. I think I'm one of the others.
So, granted, a very small sample size could easily be a statistical anomaly. On the other hand, it really raises this interesting issue that I think is worth talking about. You know, is there something about Boston that could be more tech-friendly for females? So, Jules, before we talk to you, Greg, do you feel like even if you put aside the potential sort of study sample issues, the study sample problems, do you think there's validity to this claim?
Yeah, I mean, so if it turns out, and we're going to have to watch the numbers for the rest of the year and coming years, but if it turns out that the trend continues, I mean, I could think of talking to the community a bit, three possible themes come about that might explain the trend of having more female founders. And one of them is the academic environment and the large number of highly educated women, which really feeds a strong talent pool for companies here.
And the MIT.
Harvard, BU, Babson, the list goes on. The second would be just the history of role models in the Boston area. It's just women in high positions at companies, at universities, in business. And the third would be maybe we're approaching, you know, a critical mass, enough women in tech startups or in startups in general that's starting to influence the rest.
Now, Jules, first give me a sense of whether when you heard about the study, you felt that you believe that could be correct, that Boston is just fundamentally friendlier to female entrepreneurs.
I was actually baffled at first. Greg and I had a quick chat about it because we both kind of said we were scratching our heads. And I do actually know the four funded companies, and I didn't know of 40. But I did think about it some more, and I thought one of the themes that Greg brought up was probably a great explanation if there is going to be a trend in this direction. And one is that role model explanation. We have Robin Chase, who founded Zipcar. We have Diane Hessen, Communispace, Gail Goodman, Constant Contact. Myself, my mentor, and my co-founder, Joanne Domeniconi's mentor, was Meg Whitman. We worked for her at a couple different companies here in Boston before she went to eBay. So there have been a lot of female mentors, and that's incredibly meaningful if you're thinking about starting a company.
Laura Fitton, do you feel like the mentoring issue has been a factor for you too?
Yeah, it's been a factor throughout everything that's happened to me, because I'm a very unlikely story here. I'm a 38-year-old single mom who suddenly is a tech CEO. It's almost that bizarre. But I've had great women mentoring on both coasts. I mean, out on the West Coast, we're starting an old girls network as well.
An old girls network.
We jokingly call it that, right? The CEOs that Bettina from Pixability organized here. And, you know, out in California, I've been invited to Cisco CTO Padmasri Warrior's house for wine and support. So I do think the women who are in tech are cognizant of reaching out and extremely good mentors to other women in tech. And Diane Hessen's been great for me here as well.
So, Laura, let's pause for a minute. 140, which is your company, is basically an online marketplace for Twitter apps.
Sure. We're helping people understand how Twitter can solve their ordinary everyday problems, because most people think Twitter's some obscure, bizarre sharing thing for narcissists, and there's really actually a lot of interesting uses coming out.
And you're co-author of Twitter for Dummies.
I am.
And Jules, Daily Grommet is basically, it's an e-commerce site in which you basically select what you want to be on there, and then you promote innovative products that really don't have the marketing muscle to do it on their own.
Well, we're really all about entrepreneurship. It's a good topic for us because all of our ideas for these products come from community. So people in the NPR community are a wonderful source for ideas. And when we see these stories that are worth being told about consumer products, we create a video and we send it across the web, and then community picks it back up, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, all kinds of ways of sharing with social technologies.
Both of you have said that you feel that role models have been important. Why can't a male role model be just as important as a female role model for the two of you?
Mine are extremely important. I have many on both genders.
Male and female.
Yes.
I agree with Laura. Both are important. You draw from different people, different lessons, but I think it's just natural that when you talk to people who maybe look and feel and face some of the same life path challenges, you affiliate with them a little bit better.
Yeah, that said, I vehemently disagree with something Kara Swisher tweeted a couple of weeks ago. There were a lot of these, you know, influential women on Twitter, influential women on tech lists going up. Forbes did one. HubSpot
This is Kara Swisher, who writes for the Wall Street Journal about technology.
Yeah, and Kara said, you know, you might as well do a list of, I don't know, purple people on Twitter or something like that. And it's simply not true. I'm more inspired when I see her on stage at a conference than when I see any number of men in tech. It's hard to explain that human need to see role models of people who can do what you're going to do next. So I'd say it's very important to me, both genders of mentors that I have, but yeah, it's still a little extra inspiring when you see a woman do it too.
Listeners, we're talking about female tech entrepreneurs in Boston and whether Boston is a better place for startups than other parts of the country, or whether women entrepreneurs face the same challenges here as women all across the country. We're talking to Greg Wong. He's editor of Xconomy Boston. And we have two female CEOs, Jules Pierri and Laura Fitton. Jules and Laura, could you also talk about whether you think there are particular challenges for women entrepreneurs?
I think there's a particular opportunity in that consumer internet is really a great one. Consumer in general, in that it's 65% of our economy, the consumer products and services. And over the last 10 years, the Wall Street Journal reported that it's 70% of our GDP growth. Well, if you want a big business, you want to swim in a big ocean. And women have a huge advantage in consumer because we control 85% of the consumer spend. So there's absolutely no reason why women shouldn't have an enormous advantage. The technology is no longer a barrier. Technology is now a tool. And if you look at a list of the companies in that space that are most likely to go public over the next year, very few of them are really based around technology, whether it's Gilt Group. I'm thinking of a list that Eric Schoenfeld, a particular business writer wrote. Gilt Group would be one of them. Etsy would be one of them, a marketplace for crafts. Skype, that would be a technology-based business. Also, you'd see companies like Glam Media, LinkedIn, companies, a lot of them that have to do with community or content or some form of commerce. And there is no gender bias or advantage in any of those. If anything, I think women do have an advantage.
And Laura?
Again, you know, I think it's safe to say I get a little bit more mentoring than the average bear sometimes, because it's a little bit easy to pick me out of a lineup of other startup founders that are, you know, maybe there's 25 young male startup founders and one woman. So it's hard for me to argue for the limitations of it. And frankly, anybody can argue for any limitation they have, real or perceived, and the more time they spend arguing for that limitation, the less time they spend breaking down the kinds of walls you need to break down to survive at a startup. I mean, if running into a brick wall is a problem for you, you shouldn't be running a startup.
That reminds me that I was reading an article in which you were quoted, Laura, as saying, and I think I'm remembering it correctly, that you're not a praying woman, but that the startup life has made you more contemplative and spiritual than you used to be. Is that just referring to the challenges of that world?
Well, you know, I think I've had enough instances in my life, both inside and outside of startups, where I hit into some kind of adversity and realized that flailing around and being dramatic and frustrated really didn't make the situation any better. And in fact, it's much, much easier to deal with adversity when you stay calm and keep going.
Jules, you had just talked about how the online world presents a lot of opportunities for women. Can you talk again about whether, in terms of whether tech presents certain challenges? So whereas the internet is an opportunity, is there anything fundamentally about the entrepreneurial or tech entrepreneur world that would make it harder for women to crack through it?
Oh, there's one simple one, funding. Yeah, that's harder. I think unqualifiably, if you look at any of the stats, women have less access to capital. And it'll change, but slowly. And the reason, I think, mainly is that the institutional funders are primarily 98% sort of white middle-aged males. And when you're entering into any risky endeavor, you want to sort of hang on to people that make you feel comfortable, that you know will have your back. And investing is a very risky proposition. So it's subconscious, but you certainly look at someone across the table who looks and feels like you. Maybe you're an ex-entrepreneur yourself and you want to relive some of those glory days because you enjoyed them so much. It's easy to imagine doing it through somebody who looks and talks and thinks a little bit more like you than someone who might look a little bit different. So women rarely face someone across the table who have those affiliations. That's difficult.
And I will also add, the men who have funded my company and a lot of the men I know who funded other women-led startups do happen to have a portfolio bias in favor of women. They do happen to be men who stopped and thought about this. Brad Feld is involved with Techstars, which is a program I was in, goes way out of his way to support women in tech. Dave McClure, way out of his way to support women in tech. Our Silicon Valley-based VCs, Javelin Venture Partners, we had a little social gathering of their founders, and we're kind of stunned to realize that 3 out of the 20 of us were women, and all 3 sole founders, I think. So, you know, I do think even when you're dealing with someone across the table who is different from you, it helps if the nickel has dropped in their mind somewhere and in their experience, and they're making this a priority.
Listeners, we're talking about female tech entrepreneurs in Boston. If you are a female tech entrepreneur, give us a call. We'd like to hear your experience and about whether you feel that Boston is a more difficult or easier environment in which to try to create a tech startup. You know, a few months ago, I got a tour of the Cambridge Innovation Center in Kendall Square. This is this interesting place where you can rent space from large amount of square footage with great river views. Or you can rent tiny, tiny little space, just a desk and a phone or less. And the idea is that the back sort of office work will be taken care of for you if you just get the space. The most simple type of office space they have there are these literal cubbies. You just get a little basket, and then you can come into this library-like room and work at this big table if you want. When I was there, what struck me is that there are names on the baskets. I didn't see any women's names on those baskets. It was clearly all men. And I wonder, Jules and Laura and Greg, if the three of you have any thoughts about why is that? Why even at that simple, low-cost level, we would not see more women names on that piece of real estate?
Yeah, I would just say, I was just at a tech event last night, the Mobile Monday at Google, and looking around, it was probably 1 out of 10 of the developers and business people there were women. So I think it's a continuing issue and something that not just, this is obvious to say, but it's an issue that men need to think about as well as women.
Well, everybody needs to think about it, because it's not just, oh, this is nice, there are nice women, let's get them some money. There's a lot of data starting to show that, especially among tech firms, women-led companies perform better on certain principles, you know. And some companies, when a woman, especially public companies, once a woman joins the board, start to perform differently. So it suggests there's a different approach, a different conscientiousness. A strong table has many legs and, you know, many different means of support. And I think it is a detriment to all if women are left out.
Laura, what are some of those different things you have seen by women-led companies?
I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I think capital efficiency is one of the metrics that they've noticed.
I have them here. I think the same ones probably, Laura, 35% higher return on investment for female-led teams that have venture venture backing?
I mean, I say this lightly and in jest, but, you know, compare the average bachelor pad to the average single woman's apartment. Is it more organized? Are things running more smoothly in the house? I mean, sometimes it's helpful to look at stereotypes and understand what they might mean.
Listeners, if you are a female tech entrepreneur or you have thoughts about what the climate is like in Boston for female tech entrepreneurs, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. We're at 1-800-423-TALK. Again, we're talking to Greg Huang. He's editor of Exconomy Boston. It's an online magazine for business and tech news. We're with Jules Pieri. She's CEO and founder of Daily Grommet. It's an online marketplace for consumer products. And Laura Fitton. She's with us on the phone. She's founder and CEO of 140. It's also an online marketplace, but this one for Twitter apps. And she's co-author of Twitter for Dummies. Laura, you mentioned earlier CEOs.
I wanted to just ask you if we could give a shout-out to the CEOs.
Tell us about it. It's a great name.
Bettina from Pexability is in the CIC, actually. You just didn't happen to see her name tag. And I met her at various tech events, I believe one that Scott Kirshner was doing out in the western suburbs and some other things. And we chatted. She said, I have this group for women CEOs. The group has just been, you know, everybody reaching out and inviting each other. It's grown quickly to 80 people. We have all these fun events, and I came up to her at the Kirshner event and said, I have the perfect name for us, the CEOs. And it does help to sit around the table and discuss ideas candidly. My current CEO mentor, Katie Ray, who's working on Project 11 right now to help other startups, is someone I met through that group. I frequently interact. I mean, Jules and I had a thread going on Facebook just talking about some Globe coverage my company had and how she approaches that. And having that kind of support from people literally in your shoes in a more similar way is fantastic.
And the glass of wine doesn't hurt either.
And the wine is great, too. Again, I spend a lot of time talking to male CEOs as well, but the old girls network is kind of fun.
The old girls network to rival the long entrenched old boys network.
One of the women at one of the meetings I went to was in the process of being interviewed for a public company board, and that's where I learned a ton about what to expect in that process. That's an obvious career opportunity for all the women in our group, and that's an obvious need corporate America has. So, you know, it's exciting to be able to cross-pollinate in productive ways.
And Jules, are you part of this group as well?
I am as well, yes. Okay. And I echo some of Laura's thoughts there. It's really productive to come in. I'll come to one of the sessions with specific questions or issues on my mind, and I'll know it's a place where most of the masks and sort of, you know, concerns for kind of keeping the face up are down. And you can answer honestly, and it won't leave the room. And that's important to any CEO. It's not just female CEOs.
We have a caller on the line who just joined CEOs, so why don't we hear from her? It's Tara from Westwood. Hi, Tara, and thanks for calling Radio Boston.
Hi, my name's Tara Cousineau, and I'm the founder of BodyMojo.com. It's an online team, healthy living platform, and I'm really coming out of the academic environment, so I want to comment a little bit on that my initial funding actually came through a small business innovative research grant through the NIH, and I felt really fortunate to have that. And now that we're really at the end of that development stage, it's not really like hitting a brick wall, but I'm hitting that funding challenge of reaching out to the community and learning sort of business sense and where the support is. And I've been to two CEO meetings, and I actually found out about it from an investment presentation I made in California. So that just shows you how virally that's getting around. And I just wrote somebody today an email thanking for her support in the last meeting, because I think it is a lonely place for a woman to try to get venture-backed funding, to even understand what the criteria are to be a fundable company. And since my background is social sciences and not business, I'm really trying to reach out to mentors and other groups like the Mass Tech Leadership Council. I would give a shout out to them as well, that really offer a lot of programming and support. Is there something unique about Boston? I mean, I'd like to think that there is, but I've been amazed in the last 3 to 6 months that I've really started to reach out to women entrepreneurs, really the welcoming arms and almost the lack of, just like a lack of competition. There's always ideas that women are giving me, and I just really, I have to give a shout out to the CEOs and all of these organizations, I think, that might be special to Boston.
Tara, thank you. So, Jules, she touches on the funding issue. Women may have a great idea, but when it comes to trying to find money, they may realize, I'm not quite sure how to do this.
Well, I think the biggest lesson I learned, I raised $3.4 million for Daily Grom, and I did it in really hard times, so it was probably, you know, the sort of the toughest funding environment that we've ever seen in this country over the last couple of years. And the biggest lesson I learned was claim your vision, be ballsy, to be blunt, that if you're facing particularly male investors across the street, across the table, they don't want to see timid. They don't want to see halfway measures. They want to see you claim the big idea, claim the big vision. Why is it that you believe this idea is going to be the best investment they ever made, and why you're investing your entire career and a whole team around it? It took me a while to learn that, because I would tend to build cases rationally, bottoms up. And as soon as I started saying, look, I want to change the world, I'm going to change how consumer products get discovered, shared, and bought, and that's 65% of our economy, the money started flowing in.
Interesting. We have another caller. This is Mona from Cambridge. Mona, thanks for calling Radio Boston.
Hi. Great talk. Actually, I'm on my way to meet a woman CEO of a Cambridge startup, and I'm a recent MIT Sloan graduate, and the only thing that keeps me from joining her after being 9 years in startups is the fact that I have a small child, and the startup life is risky, and I can't afford private daycare and do the startup. And I think we were joking around on Twitter that if the Center for Innovation sent her off for the childcare, maybe that would help. But can you comment on the fact that maybe one simple barrier is that, and it's not a Boston thing only, is that in the U.S., I'm from France, you have to wait till your children can get into public school in kindergarten.
And Mona, do you mean because the money coming in may not be secure, or because...
Yeah, I mean, I need to pay $2,100 a month for my baby, right? And I love the risk, and I think I can talk and get the funding, but the fact is, to live a risky life, I need a daycare system that lets me take those risks. And so, as a woman, that's a really big deal that, you know, is not talked about. But, you know, I think if there were things like subsidized preschools and things like in an innovation center, they don't seem to think that, you know, a lot of women have children that need to be dropped off somewhere.
So, Jules and Laura.
It kind of drives me nuts when this topic, unfortunately, is stuck being a woman in business issue, because why aren't the dads held as accountable for childcare? In my case, I'm a single mom, and my kids were 2 and 3 when I started this. But my ex kicked butt, if I may say that on the radio, and he stepped up, and he and his girlfriend spent a lot more time with the kids. I had to be in California for 3 months. Now, we have an au pair, which is a lot cheaper than $2,100 a month, but the other thing that helped me was, frankly, you know, Jules can comment more articulately than I can on what it's like to raise in a bad economic environment. I also raised in the same environment, but I'd never done it before, so I had no idea that it was harder or easier. I know one thing, the whole economy was such a mess that the personal financial risk myself and my children were going through as a result was happening anyway. So if anything, that took some of the load off. I lived on credit cards for 5 or 6 months. I wouldn't advise anybody else to do it, but there weren't any other choices. Mm.
So there may seem to be a lot of flexibility with being a female entrepreneur, but in fact, it comes with pretty long hours and not being sure whether the money will flow in. It's interesting.
Yeah, but just in general, I just wish someone would bring up, you know, a men in business issue pertaining to childcare.
Sure.
It's really unfortunate that divide remains.
Fair point. We've been talking about female tech entrepreneurs in Boston, and a recent study that said that Boston is a more friendly place, or at least seems to have more female tech entrepreneurs than even places like California. We have been talking to Greg Huang. He's the reporter behind the story and the editor of Exconomy Boston. Greg, thank you for coming into the studio.
Thanks so much.
Jules Pierre, CEO and founder of The Daily Grommet, which is an online marketplace for consumer products. Thank you also to you for coming in.
Thank you, Stacey.
And Laura, thank you for being on the phone with us. Laura is founder and CEO of 140, a marketplace for Twitter apps.
Thank you very much.